Good afternoon and welcome to the first pilot show of TIP TV Blockchain in association with CoinDesk. My name is Charlie Green, and over the next 10 to 15 minutes, I hope to have a road to Damascus moment and be converted into a Bitcom believer. On my right and left, I have my two guests who are charged with this task of massive conversion from my Luddite position. My good friend and Bitcoin guru, Charlie Morris from AtlasPulse.com, and the talented and head of foreign exchange, Eddie Tofbeck from ADM Investor Services. Well, I guess for the complete Luddites like me, what is a Bitcoin?
Well, I think, you know, going back to the beginning, there have been attempts to create alternative forms of money for the millennia. It goes back to the beginning of time. And there have been previous attempts to create electronic money, for example, Bit Gold back in the day. Many of these have been shut down. I think what's interesting about this, it's the first time in history you've been able to exchange value over the internet. And let's think about that for a second, because if I take a £10 note or whatever, I can't use it on the internet. I can use a credit card, but actually what that's doing is telling my bank account to shift money to someone else's bank account. This is a cash transaction, if you like, over the internet. And what you can't do is cut and paste a Bitcoin. So there's a sort of idea when you say, okay, I've got a Bitcoin, well, let's just sort of get the code, press paste, and I've got two Bitcoins. No, that doesn't work.
Right.
And so the technology is such that you have a blockchain, and the blockchain means that you trace the roots of each coin. It's wrong to think of a Bitcoin having a serial number. That's people's first thought. Instead, it has a history, a bit like you have a grand history. You're probably related to the Duke of someone or other, or some grand king or queen. And by tracing a history of each coin, that's how you validate it.
And who controls the supply? And I mean, I read that you can have a maximum of 21 million coins. But I mean, who can, you know, can I just get on a computer and create one?
Well, you can actually if you're a miner, but you'd need to have a computer that's remarkably powerful. You'd need to have the sort of computer from a large bank or something like that, or from NASA. And if you had this extraordinarily powerful computer, you could mine Bitcoins. Currently, your reward would be 25 Bitcoins every 10 minutes if you successfully mined. I mean, it's a highly competitive process. Incidentally, that drops to 12.5 coins in July.
Right.
And so the rate of inflation is falling. It's currently 9% a year. It's going to be 4.5%, and it's going to end up at zero. Because you quite rightly said there's going to be a cap of 21 million Bitcoins. Currently, they're just over 15 million Bitcoins. It started at the beginning of January 2009. So the rate of new supply is going to be falling all the time.
Yeah. And obviously, when supply comes into question, you then think about currency fluctuations and the value. And I remember in the very early days, everyone said Bitcoin was great, and it shot up to whatever, I can't remember, £700. Then it crashed, and it seems to be slightly smoother. But I gather, you've got a nice chart here which will show the recent movements.
Yeah. This is the most recent movement since September for Bitcoin against the US dollar, which is the main one it's traded against. And you can see the actual things. I think it's blockchain.net, I think you can actually...
.info,
where you can actually see the transactions taking place. This just basically shows a gradual movement up and down. Some extraordinary movements in, say, November, when we had the Russian Ponzi scheme, which caused it to rally so much and then come straight back off again. But we've also seen some recent movements which have been very interesting. The drop in early January, which was due to margin calls in the Asian stock markets. And one of the things I've been speaking about generally is the fact that big influence that the Chinese have on this market. Yeah. They're actually as consumers and traders of it. They actually move their currency, because it's very limited in what you can actually do in the Chinese yuan. They use this a lot more as a store of value and a medium of exchange. So it's great for that sort of opportunity. And also you've seen sort of movements up when, for example, in South Africa had some run-ins recently. They lost their finance minister twice in, I think, a month or so, which is a bit careless. That caused Bitcoin to move up purely because of the worries about it. Where were you going to put your money when you've got limited amounts of foreign currency you can get involved in? Well, you can go into gold, or you can go into the 21st century equivalent of gold, which is Bitcoin.
So you'd almost expect over crisis that it actually could go up because people...
It has done.
Yes, because I mean, they see it's a store of value. But something you touched there, which also brings us to the fact it's not regulated currently, I think that's Right.
No, it depends where you are. It's banned in some. I think North Korea banned it, but that says more about North Korea than it does about Bitcoin.
I mean, the Russians as well don't like it very much. As well.
There's a sort of list of, you know, people are trying to define it, and legally most people have said it's property rather than money.
Yeah, I think it's CFTC or the EU have said it's a commodity or something like that, I think, as well.
Yeah, it kind of behaves like a commodity financially because you've got limited supply and demand is basically a social media type thing. It's a bit like WhatsApp, how many people are using it, the network effect. So in many ways, it kind of behaves like a commodity, but is useful as money.
Yes, exactly. It's a 21st century equivalent of gold. Gold, there's not that much of it. We've mined, I think, the size of an Olympic swimming pool of gold from ever.
Yeah.
And what do you use it for? Well, there's some electronic uses, some dental uses, but most of it is actually as a monetary base.
Yes.
So this is a monetary base in one way, store of value, medium of exchange, but it's not physical. Instead of actually having great big trucks and vaults to hold it in, you can hold it on a mobile phone.
But, I mean, countries that have tight foreign exchange controls must be horrified because, particularly as you mentioned, China. I mean, this is a way it opens the floodgates to a certain extent for Chinese people to get money out of the country.
It's, to coin a phrase, it's a two-sided coin.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. I understand that recently in Afghanistan, a translator wanted to be paid for some of the work she did for the US government, but she didn't want it in US dollars and definitely not in Afghanistan. And she was actually paid in Bitcoin, some of the stuff that was actually taken from one of the seizures that the Federal Bureau of Investigation had done. So therefore, it is used by the establishment, if you like, as a payment method. But also, yes, they look at it and go, well, there's no control. But again, that's also one of the things I've got an issue with, is that if somebody does something to this currency, to you, who do you complain to?
Yes. And I mean, and also along those lines, it's sort of, you know, underneath the simmering criminal activity, money laundry,
yeah, but that's
evasion.
Same for dollars and, you know, what somebody said, I think, you know, all $100 bills have got some traces of cocaine in them and things like that. So there's a number of features to it. It's all of those things.
Yeah.
It's what it is to everybody. But the difference is there's no central authority over it.
Charlie, do you ever see it being controlled? I mean, I can't see the Fed just sitting there.
I think there's a, you know, this is a blockchain program, not a Bitcoin program. We're on Bitcoin at the moment. Mm. I think that's quite important to understand. There are, you know, several hundred of these copycats of Bitcoins, and some of them are quite impressive. There's one called Ethereum, which is actually biting at its ankles.
Oh, right.
And so Ethereum's number two. It's now worth around $600 million, whereas Bitcoin's worth about $6 billion, $6 billion, having been worth about $10 million last summer. So, you know, a 60-bagger in no time at all. And this is basically, a simple way to describe it is a Bitcoin with an app store on top. So it's got functionality.
Right.
You can and you can sort of write contracts. You know, you could say we're going to have a bet on the rugby and put it on the blockchain, and there it is forever for everyone to see. And you could lock up the money. You know, so let's say it's 10 quid. So we put the 10 quid on the blockchain, and three signatures. There are three signatories, and two will release it. So if you know if you're in denial, then you know Eddie here and I could sign it, and I get paid if I won, for example.
Right. Yeah.
So there's that sort of clever application of what we can do with money we hadn't even thought about in the past, you know, real-time billing of electricity, this sort of thing.
Yes.
I think one of the things also is, you said you want to be convinced of it. You're not the market for Bitcoin. Really, you're not. You're quite happy in your world. It's doing quite well.
Yes.
There are a lot of people who don't have access to financial services, but who have access to a mobile phone. And they can actually use that as a medium of store of exchange, and they can move around and pay people with that sort of thing, necessarily. Whereas they wouldn't, you know, there's not necessarily, you're not the target market.
Can I tell you that, sorry, Eddie, but I mean, the problem with that is a nice story
in
doing the rounds, but there's no evidence that this thing's taken off in the third world whatsoever. I mean, it really is a sort of Los Angeles, London, New York, Tokyo, Hong Kong, Beijing.
China, thing. Big thing.
You know, it's these sorts of places. And if you look at the map of the world with where the lights are on, that's where people are using Bitcoin. That's the link.
And who was the first person who came across this and produced the first Bitcoin?
Well, no one knows, but his name is Satoshi Nakamoto.
And so
he's either one person or a group of people.
Group of people, yeah. Maybe.
So is he sitting on a huge pot of gold?
Yeah. Allegedly. Allegedly a
million,
huge pot of Bitcoin.
Bitcoins or something.
And how can you get... No, see, I'm not converted. How can you get real cash out of the system?
Go to a cash point machine.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you go to a Bitcoin Cash.
There's what does it pay? Bitcoins or
pounds? It will pay out pounds, yeah.
You can, if you like a nice coffee somewhere in Shoreditch, I'm sure they'll provide
it. Yeah, I'm
sure.
There's, I mean, I went to one in Shoreditch some years ago. I mean, I bought a glass of wine in Chamonix. I mean, it was quite difficult. I had to go onto the internet and say, anyone accept Bitcoin in Chamonix? And then I found out there was the Monkey Bar. I went to the Monkey Bar, and everyone got terribly excited. I was the eighth customer, I think, who had tried to buy a drink in Bitcoin. Everyone got excited and all sort of stood around the computer, and it happened. There's a lot of cheering. And
and there's stories on the internet currently of a girl who spent a whole week or day just on Bitcoin and survived, but that was probably in LA or something.
I mean, I think one of the things there is there's the presumption that it's going to be retail money. I don't think that's really the point. I mean, yes, there's a subsidiary role that, you know, Bitcoin might be useful for buying a cheeseburger, but actually it's internet money created by the internet for the internet. And I think if you think of it in those terms, it's actually pretty powerful. I mean, it's this simple idea I keep going back to is, you know, you're in publishing or something, you have the Times newspaper. Why can't you buy a copy of the Times there and then over the internet without giving your credit card details, because you don't want to give your credit card details.
Yeah.
As the Ashley Madison customers found out, you don't want to give your details to too many of these people. And actually, you just want to do a simple cash transaction. What's wrong with that? You can go to the newsagent with £2, buy a newspaper, walk off. Why can't you do that over the web?
Well, there's a lot of libertarians and people such as that, evangelists, who actually that's what they're there for. And I've come across those as well. I'm doing a technical analysis. I look at it from the point of view, I hope, dispassionately, and say, I think it's going up or I think it's going down. Sometimes when I've published something that says, actually, I think it's going to go down now, I've had stuff come back saying, actually, you don't know nothing. What the hell are you talking about? Okay, I don't know nothing if you can argue the case against me. But don't just say it because you're an evangelist for Bitcoin. I don't think anybody is as such.
No.
But it's coming now to the attention of many, many people who, obviously the big banks are interested, but they're trying to slice and dice it, just separate the public ledger part of it.
Yes.
But Bitcoin itself, no, that's going to go forward, I think.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it being a unit to buy things on the internet, and me as Mr. Lullard saying £10 and I get 10 units of Bitcoin. It's the deep sort of suspicion is, how's it created? Who's it controlling? But then I suppose central banks, you know, as we've seen recently in America and Europe, they just print money anyway. But I suppose what everyone's getting upset about, it's this mysterious group of people doing it, rather than a regulator.
Well, it's an open source project, so it's very transparent. All the code is on GitHub for you to see. I don't know where it is, I wouldn't know where to find it, and I wouldn't know what to do with it if I did find it. But people who understand these things can go and get it and look at it. It's very transparent. The whole thing is held together by miners. It's their computing power that keeps the system secure and keeps it operating. And so in that sense, it's it is very friendly to the libertarian cause.
Right.
And, you know, limited supply as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really is, I mean, it caught my attention 2.5 years ago. I just said, wow, this really is electronic. This really is electronic money that can that can work. This is something incredibly new. And then I quickly realized that it's the network effect behind it. So if this thing grows, yeah, I mean, it is growing, but not that quickly.
Yeah.
If it grows, then the upside is exponential. Yeah. So if everyone in the world started to use this normally, then it would be worth not 5 billion, but 5 trillion. I mean, it really would be. And so I sort of came at this as a new asset class, and tying that in with the idea of there's problems in the world with the bond markets and the debt and faith in currencies and QE and ZERP and all these issues, and maybe this is actually a part of the solution. And so there's a little bit of macro in me. There's a little bit of an exciting little tech stock about it, and just generally there's a real buzz around this space. I think just to cap it off, the big problem with Bitcoin at the moment is it's got a block. There's a block size debate. So the block, each block every 10 minutes, which processes all the transactions, can't go over a megabyte. Yeah.
Right.
Let's not go into computers. But it's nearly a megabyte at the moment because it's grown to that point. There's politics behind the scenes of how to change the code. What is the best solution? Do we have this new code or do we change the existing code and blah, blah, blah? And that has not yet been resolved. Right. So that is why I believe that the price should be $700 because the network has grown, but it's still at $430. And that one of the reasons for that kind of discount where it ought to be is fears over the fact that this hasn't been resolved.
I'd go along with that. There is definitely sometimes there's a lot of indecision in this market, and you're thinking, actually, the world that it's designed for, it's not actually showing it should be sort of going up, or maybe it should be going down, but there's a lot of indecision which way it's going to go in some cases, and it's quite interesting to watch.
Okay, Charlie and Eddie, well, I'm halfway down the road to Damascus. I'm not completely there, but food for thought, and great to meet you both, and thank you for your contributions.
Thank you.
Thank you.